You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here. Boy, what a week. So much stuff going on. Of course, it always seems to be the case, right, Jim?
Well, it seems somebody was listening to Shania Twain's song, That Don't Impress Me Much. NVIDIA earnings didn't seem to impress people.
Okay. Well, we had a lot happening, no question about it. And I got to say, we're living in the golden age of news and developments. If you just think about, you know, my lifetime, all that, and I'm sure yours as well, all that we've seen in advancements in civilization and politics and just science and medicine, it's just amazing stuff. But anyway, we just had big State of the Union speech here. Everybody's got different opinions about it. I don't want to get into politics, but, you know, it obviously was an important presentation. But country has to move forward and it needs leadership, and sometimes you got good and sometimes you got bad leadership. At the moment, I believe it's good, and despite, you know, a lot of feelings to the contrary. In any event, so much news this week. You know, are we sitting on the brink of war with Iran? Probably yes, you know, despite all the talk about peace and about non-nuclear proliferation and so forth, you know, that's probably a given, but we'll see how that plays out. You know, we took out the leader in Maduro in Venezuela, and now we're unhappy with Cuba, and perhaps Cuba is next. It's just so much stuff. It's like you just can't keep up, you know, with the news, and forget, you know, the political stuff that, you know, we don't want to get into so much with the opposing politics here in the U.S. and around the world. But, you know, it's one of the big stories for me, you know, was the knowing my level of interest, you know, in this, it's not sci-fi, but in terms of, you know, the super science out there that we don't seem to hear more about, is the president's edict about releasing UFO files that, you know, we've all been hoping and praying for the longest time. But we already know that President Obama made a similar release when he left office, and all he got was a bunch of blacked out documents. So I think, you know, we have to slow down in our expectations, and I've slowed down a long time ago. I'm a big believer that much of the information we have that is owned and controlled by sources that will never release that information could be in private hands. A lot of the secret government work has been delegated to private corporations and so forth. And, you know, we could spend hours and hours on the subject. So I don't think it's to the advantage of leaders to disclose everything, because there's power in the secrecy and in the advanced technology that's out there. And, you know, we're supposedly now going back to the moon after decades of not being there, and there's a lot of discussion about why that occurred. Of course, I have my opinions, as others have too, about covering up secret bases and artifacts and other things on the moon that we were told were something we, you know, we really don't need to know about. But anyway, to me, that's sort of the big story. I'm very happy that President Trump has made that proclamation, but I'm realistic, Jim, about what we're ever going to find out. I mean, the original version of a bill that had been created in Congress back in 2023 said they were supposed to create an independent UAP records review board, allow a board to override agency classification decisions, grant subpoena authority witnesses and documents, and compelled testimony under oath, directed agencies to declassify records, and on and on and on. And more importantly, much of this hasn't happened. So I think we're just going to have to watch Star Trek and enjoy the fantasy that may exist, but we'll never really find out about.
Well, Star Trek, as it's portrayed, is impossible because of the theory of relativity. The faster you go, the more time slows down. So if you go fast enough, you could be able to go out into space and you come back and watch yourself blast off. Or you land back in the 1700s. Where are you going to get the dilithium crystals to power your spaceship then? That's the reality of outer space.
Warp speed, right. Where does it get you? Right.
Well, as you know, you stay in one place and you warp time around you. That's how the warp drive works. Again, how can they communicate back and forth in real time? It would be impossible. What kind of communications are they using to do that? No one's done a real science fiction show. What would happen if you traveled that fast and came back to Earth? You'd land back in King Arthur's time. You'd have that Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court situation. Mark Twain already thought about it. How could we make money from this, Mark? That's what people want to know. How can I make money if there's aliens?
Right. So I guess that's the point of this podcast is, you know, we're trying to delve into mundane level of making money and surviving as participants in this world economy and in our day-to-day existence, and the fantasy of whether we're going to find out what planet the aliens come from, or whether they're time travelers, or whether they're even there—something that we never may ever find out about. But those who've experienced the extraterrestrials and those witnesses that have seen certain things and certain testimony about what they've seen in terms of recovered craft and so forth and so on, I guess that's their reality, but it may never be ours. So trying to be optimistic about it. I mean, having known I met the producer of the Roswell films back in the 1980s, the Roswell movie about the Roswell crash, and finding out at that time about many of the cover-ups that existed that in the late 1940s and threats against people if they would disclose the truth, you know, sort of opened my eyes quite a bit to where we're really going to go with all this, you know. So it's an exciting subject, but I don't think, as I mentioned a moment ago, without delving too much into it, I know the focus of the podcast is more the markets and everything else. I don't think it's to the powers that be advantage to let us know the truth. So let's leave it at that.
Now, getting back to NVIDIA AI chips and so on, is the glow off that, or is there a surplus of them? There are not enough of them? What's going on in the AI chip market?
Well, we went short NVIDIA right after the market closed yesterday. We have this inverse ETF that we recommended, and it was the straightforward expression is buy the rumor, sell the news. So we had, you know, the news out, and previously when the stock surged based on news, it ultimately sold off quite a bit. You know, NVIDIA has no monopoly on the technology. Other companies are coming up with and will come up with competing products. China, I'm sure, already has it or is in the process of getting it. The stock company's doing well. But it's overly hyped, and you know, I think most of the gains that frankly have already been seen. But just technically, my work said, you know, it's over for a while and it's time to trade it for a short, and we were right today because the stock sold off. Actually, we did pretty well because it was up quite a bit post market yesterday. It rallied up, I believe, 207 area or so, and I got down to the 180s today. So we've already seen, you know, a nice drop. But to answer your question, you know, there's no exclusivity to chips or to technology, and other companies and other countries are out there competing with them. So I think, I don't want to say the days are numbered for NVIDIA, but that's probably not too far from the truth, other than the fact they have a lot of money they could throw around in the meantime. But technically the stock looks like it's going lower, so we felt that for a while. So let's see what happens. I'm not a bull on NVIDIA. You know, it's like the whole market, waits for one company or one stock's earnings report. You know the market is in danger because the market is so big and there's so many companies and there's so many products and services and technology. And if we wait for one company to show us how the direction is headed, then we know we're in trouble. And that's the problem with times like, you know, in the years past, there's been companies like this, like Xerox and Polaroid and IBM in its day, and that we can go on. And, you know, of course, you had the dot-com bubble, you know, with the big names back then, and, you know, things just burst. And I'm afraid that's going to happen. All the sages out there will tell you it's different this time, and I don't believe that's the case. But anyway, I'm a bear on that, and we've seen warnings before now with a lot of technology stocks starting to back off. You know, all this Mag 7 nonsense that's been going on so long. You know, at the very least, you need an enema here, you know, and then we'll take it from there. Maybe after big cleansing and correction, maybe there'll be buys again. That's where I'm at.
Well, remember back in the mid-60s, the president of IBM said he couldn't see the need for any more than 5 computers for the whole world.
Didn't know that. Right. Yeah. I like that.
And the head of GM or Ford said he couldn't imagine a Japanese car maker ever making any inroads into the U.S. And then, you know, 15, 20 years later, the Honda was the best-selling car in the U.S. So, you know, trying to predict the future, pretty hard.
Surprises every day, right? And, you know, that's what's exciting about watching the financial markets and doing what we do is I always felt and still feel that the closest thing we have in life to a crystal ball are the markets, financial markets, because they sort of, you know, they tell you where the action is, where money is flowing, where new technology is and so forth. So if there's a buck to be made, it's going to be portrayed clearly in the markets, and that's going to tell you what the future may hold. So that's where I'm at. That's why I do what I do. You don't need a real crystal ball. Just have to watch the markets, the market tape. That tells you anyway. And that tells you the story.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on in the gold market?
Well, there's nothing that says that the bull market is over. We've had a big spike up. We're hearing that many of the insiders at the exchange and so forth, and you know, data that tracks insider buying at the in the futures markets are still buyers of gold. You know, I have no reason to, you know, question that unless the charts break down considerably. But if you do look at the charts, you know, there's some parameters here. You know, a move as high as 6,600 is possible, as well as a decline as low as 3,500 in, you know, just looking at potential volatility in a market that has been volatile over the decade. So, you know, maybe we continue trade sideways or higher for a little bit. Maybe we have one more spike up, and then the inevitable correction will probably unfold. So more than likely, you know, with the state of the world right now, you know, probably the more prudent path is to hold on to the gold rather than think it's going to sell off dramatically here. But you got to be prepared that we've seen corrections in the past, and they come out of the blue and surprise the bulls. And we did have a sort of a blow-off here, no question, in silver and gold temporarily. So don't sell the coins. There's going to be volatility. I think, you know, we could have the same conversation 20, 25 years ago and be correct. You know, the trend overall is up, but you need infinite patience. So as a trader, I wouldn't be taking new positions here. I mean, if you're in it, and as many of us are, at much lower prices, you know, I would sort of just, you know, keep my positions. And if you do get a sharp correction, you know, and you have the extra cash, you know, then take advantage of it. So in gold, I would be the 4,300 level, possibly as low as 3,500 if we had a shakeout. And silver, I was asked this early in the year on another interview, you know, what could silver do? And I said, well, maybe you go to 100 and then go back to 50. And sure enough, it went over 100 and still hasn't corrected back to 50. So that might be the corrective point for silver here. And whether we'll trade slightly higher first or not, that's a moot point here. But again, I wouldn't chase it, but if it did get back down there, it'd probably, you know, create a trading opportunity. So still overall bullish, but being prepared for a lot of volatility.
What's happening with platinum and palladium?
Doing the same. You know, they're in sympathy. You know, they're just correcting the big run-ups. You know, we're getting down to the bottom line is, do we need all these exotic metals and materials? And the answer is yes, you know, for defense purposes, for economic purposes, and so forth. So platinum in particular is, you know, very attractive to me. We've talked about this before. I mean, look where it trades relative to gold. I mean, for so many years in the distant past, you know, platinum would trade at twice or three times the price of gold. And then here we are, you know, so cheap compared to where gold is. I mean, you know, you're looking at a couple thousand dollars an ounce, where it used to trade at this price when gold was at 800, you know, and here it is here. So there's some huge catch-up potential. And then palladium, not as much, but definitely platinum. Copper's been doing well. It's the, you know, it's the search for not only in defensive positions, but because of technological and defense reasons, that and the psychology for commodities has greatly increased. So we're in that, I don't want to call it a bubble phase, but maybe we're getting close to a bubble phase where you got to own the metals and rare earths and, you know, critical metals and so forth and so on. In fact, there was a story today on the internet. I don't know how true it is or not, probably not, but there were some rumors that Iran, you know, was looking to make a peace deal with Donald Trump, since he's a businessman and is looking for economic benefit in any kind of deal he structures. You know, of course, you know, we did this one with Ukraine, and just recently, regarding, you know, U.S. getting paid back for the money that's being spent there by getting access to their natural resources. Well, there's some story today about Iran offering, you know, oil and access to rare earths and minerals and all their natural resources as a way of getting money into the West, or in particular to the U.S. So trying to appeal to Donald Trump's business perspective, so to speak. So obviously the world's got a big focus on the metals and money. That's really what it comes down to. I hope they don't take a deal like that. I think there are other reasons why Iran needs to, you know, the political situation there needs to be changed, and hopefully we don't make a deal just for money. But that was a story today I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're trying to take over or acquire Greenland and expand our influence, supposedly for critical metals, rare earths, and other, you know, basic commodity needs. So it would make sense that they would make that kind of offer, but it's just interesting that came up today since we're talking about metals.
Anything happening with crude, if there's going to be a possible war with Iran?
Well, crude had a big move. You know, it got a little toppy here, and I believe that, yeah, if there was something, if it became a shooting war or something more significant, you know, you can talk about the Straits of Hormuz and all kinds of variables out there, you would think there would be so much greater potential there. So I would remain overall bullish, but we took profits in most of our oil stocks just short term here. And again, you understand we take more of a trading perspective, but we had a nice move, you know, Chevron, Exxon, all the big names, you know, and the charts are not bearish. They're just way extended, and a lot of the news, I think, had been discounted there. But I think oil overall is still positive. I still think it's cheap relative to other commodities. in terms of the advance it has made compared to others. And if you just want to compare the advance in gold and silver to crude oil, we got a long way to go to the upside just to catch up on a percentage basis, that's for sure. But so my comment is I'm a little neutral right here. I guess if shooting starts and you get a breakout, I guess as a trader you have to make a judgment about, you know, trading back into it. But we had a nice little move here in some of these oil stocks. So just watching here from the sidelines to see how the charts play out.
Anything going on with cannabis?
Not much. Tracking the stocks every day, they get little pops, they get little pullbacks. Still cheap relative to where they've been. This is almost like the UFO story, Jim, in a way. Yeah. We can stretch it here. You got a story, you're hoping for some dramatic results and benefit, and it just never materializes. And in cannabis, it's almost the same thing. We're sitting here waiting for rescheduling and banking laws to be passed, and nothing ever seems to happen, and they go nowhere for a long time. So I guess if we live long enough, we're going to see all the legislation come through to legalize cannabis and change our banking laws here in the U.S. Unlike Canada, we're just in the Stone Age here in terms of making progress on that account. So we may be holding our breath like we're waiting for the UFO files, waiting for cannabis to finally get the air cleared, so to speak, so these companies can really move forward and you know benefit from from the business they hope to achieve. But they're being held back, you know, when legislation isn't clear, when there's federal versus state laws that are conflicting with each other, on and on and on. So, you know, they trade on rumor, they jump up, they pull back, some stories come out, and they are tradable, you know, some of these little $2, $3, $4 stocks, and the big news is out, but yet it hasn't really been consummated. You know, we really haven't accomplished what Donald Trump was attempting to do with that executive order. And the same thing with the UFO story we just talked about. The executive order, I don't think, is going to accomplish the objective that he may have hoped for, or others like myself may have hoped for. So cannabis and UFOs are sort of in the same category, unfortunately, for me.
Anything happening with uranium?
Uranium's doing better. It's pulled back a little bit, but still strong demand for nuclear expansion and development. So like anything else, these stocks trade. There's an ETF for uranium. You can trade that as well. The big name, of course, is Cameco. We keep talking about the big Canadian company, ticker symbol CCJ. It's done really well this year. I mean, the last year and a half or so, the stock's gone from like 20 or 30 all the way up to 100 and about 135, only about 100-point move. But it's starting to, you know, chop around here and go sideways. So I think it got overdone a little bit just technically. I mean, that's a hell of a move, 100 points in the stock for something that didn't move for many years. So I wouldn't buy it here. I would just wait. I think you might get a little bit more of a correction. And I am concerned about the overall markets. We haven't really addressed that, so I might as well do that. I think a lot of stocks that have run up big, you know, including the video, which we've already talked about, Cameco, I guess, is a less extreme example, but still way up there. You know, the market is way extended, and we're running into what I've predicted and talked about here, this negative cyclical time frame, which is approaching, whether it's the Ides of March or the vernal equinox. We have other cycles that we talk about in our newsletter that I think are taking effect now. So I think the next 30 days to 90-day period, it's hard to pinpoint it. I'd be careful, and you might see more of a correction. And this may apply to the metals as well. You know, when everything ran up so big, you know, they throw the baby out with the bathwater. So I'm more of a bear overall on stocks here, even though there's some individual names that pop up each day. You know, we had Netflix, for example, rally after the close today or last day or so, because maybe the deal with Warner Brothers Discovery may not happen, since Paramount offered, you know, a higher price, you know, for example. And then J.M. Smucker's Jelly Company, you know, the jelly manufacturer, their stock took off in the last 24 hours because of good earnings. Dutch Brothers Coffee took off on valuation discussion. So we can run down the list here. There's always a good news story after the close, and individual stocks pop up. And then only another one, Dell Computer, took off today on a good earnings report. So, you know, there's a lot of tradable stuff that happens day to day in individual names. And there's also been a push because technology has been in a correction for the last several weeks and scared a lot of people. And I think they got even more scared today with NVIDIA coming down. You know, more conservative names have attracted investors. That's one of the reasons why the Dow Industrials got to 50,000 a few days ago. And I put out a little notice about whether that could have been a bull trap, because everybody got excited at 50,000 in the Dow. But the reason for that is you've got a lot of quote-unquote conservative names, not the high-tech names, that are rallying, you know, names like Procter & Gamble and Boeing and General Mills and stuff like that, suddenly, you know, attracted investor interest because they're not high-tech, you know, they're not the Microsoft or NVIDIA type names. They're more down-to-earth type companies that have been around a long time, pay dividends, and you know, usually don't have the kind of volatility that you get with the high-flying tech stocks. So there's still, you know, some of these companies, you know, we still need toilet paper and Johnson & Johnson with baby powder and Clorox with Clorox and all these other companies. Yeah, Costco, you still have to do your shopping. So there's still going to be business for these more online, you know, traditional names out there. So I think investors may be migrating more to those if they need to put some money into the markets. And that might hold up the Dow a little bit, I suppose. But I still think we're in this treacherous period here a little bit. So I'd be careful.
Mark, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always fun. Thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street or also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.